So welcome. If you don't already have a bolster, a blanket, and a block, I recommend you grab those things. Once you got your stuff, you can go ahead and find a comfortable seat. Namaste. All right, so welcome. Today we're doing a flow for the hips. And so this will be a very sort of what I consider sort of a traditional approach to the yin practice, a more standard approach. Last week we did something that was very creative and different, which I think is good. But today we'll go back to business as usual. So let's bring the right leg out. We'll bring the left foot to the inside of the thigh. And relax as we come forward and down over the leg. And as many of you know, it's very important that you feel the postures in certain parts of your body. If you don't, no matter how pretty your pose is or how deep you are in it, the pose is considered incorrect as far as we're concerned. The opposite is also true. If you feel it in the proper area and your pose is very unsightly, we don't want to look at it, maybe it looks kind of messy, it doesn't matter, the pose is still correct or proper. So in this posture, I'd like to feel it in the back of our right thigh, a stretching sensation or a lengthening of that muscle group called the hamstrings. This isn't difficult for most people. If you come into this position and relax, you will likely feel some stretching in the back of the leg. If you're having trouble tilting forward in a passive way, which is what we want in a yin practice, then sit up on a block, or maybe even two blocks. If you feel like you're going a little too deep or a little too far, which happens to some people, then use a block or a bolster in front of you. You can prop your elbows up, lay your chest on the bolster, or place your head on a block. All of these things can help you from going quite so far into it. So what's important in this style of practice is how it feels, not how it looks. The other part of that is avoiding any sort of injury. So you want to be sure that you feel safe. That feeling of safety can change as our practice evolves. If we're brand new to yoga and we haven't done a lot of movement in our lives, we've been very sedentary, which is common in the modern American culture, then we might be quite alarmed by things we feel in our body, sensations that we feel. We might feel that something is dangerous, even though it's not. We also, many of us, come to yoga with injuries that we don't even know about. Then when we start to move our body in ways that we haven't done, perhaps since we were children, we find those injuries begin to rear their heads. We begin to feel them. We say, oh, you know what? My shoulder hurts when I do that. My hip hurts when I do that. Now, once again, I'll need to say that just because something hurts, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily bad for you. But it could mean that. So if you are in pain or you're finding that something is very difficult for you, just let me know. And we'll take a look at it together. We can have a little powwow and figure out if it seems to be safe for you to do that. And maybe actually therapeutic, ultimately. If some of you have done physical therapy in the past, then you probably know how painful physical therapy can be, how torturous it is. You're like, I'm paying this person to torture me? Why am I doing that? Well, because very often, in order for the body to heal completely, we have to move in ways that might be very uncomfortable or, again, even painful. So unfortunately for us as human beings, it would be wonderful if everything that was painful meant that it was injurious. And make our lives really simple, right? Just avoid pain and you will never get hurt. But it's not that simple, unfortunately. And sometimes avoiding pain actually makes injuries worse. If you understand how physical therapy works, then you understand that avoiding the pain that your physical therapist is trying to get you to do likely means you will never make a full recovery from that injury. That's why the physical therapist is trying to get you to stress the tissues to make them stronger and healthier. But this isn't physical therapy. So again, communicate. Let me know. And we'll take a look at it together and see if we can get to the bottom of it. Otherwise, you just relax. You let time and gravity do the work for you in this practice, which really is very special. Yin yoga is the closest thing that I've discovered as something for nothing. I can come home, lay on my mat, exert almost no energy. All I have to give is time, and I feel better when I'm done. Let's switch sides. Same thing. We call this the half butterfly. And it's just a very archetypal hamstring stretch. You're going to find this shape in all kinds of things. In yoga and stretch class, the gym. Runners will do this to stretch out their legs after running. So this is just a very common shape for humans to use to address the hamstrings. Now I know, contrary to what many people think, they might think that they're here to try and become more flexible, that they're trying to achieve some sort of amazing level of ability with their body, but that really isn't how I see it. I'm just wanting you to stretch these muscles because it's good for you to do so. So while you might be thinking, well, I'm doing this today so that tomorrow I'll be more flexible, and then I'll do it again tomorrow, and then I will be more flexible, and on and on and on, until I've got my leg behind my head. But to me, that's very, very much not important. But right now, what's happening is important. So really, we aren't doing this to get something else. By doing this, we get the results right here, right now. By stretching these tissues right here, right now, we do several different things for us, both from a Western, anatomical, scientific, medical perspective, and from a more energetic Eastern perspective. The Eastern yogic sciences like Taoism and the yoga that comes from the Brahmanic culture, these you could say are ancient types of medicine or science. That the people who developed these systems had very, very refined consciousness or awareness that lived within them. And so they picked up on subtle movements of energy within the body, and they developed certain poses or postures or ways of moving the body that would help balance and create harmony in these energies. When these energies are out of balance or out of whack, they found that people tend to suffer from physical ailments or emotional ailments or even mental cloudiness. When these energies were balanced, people tended to feel better. Their bodies tended to perform better. They were more emotionally stable and able to handle emotional upset more easily. One day we may have a scientific explanation for all of these reasons, right? Science isn't true. Science isn't any more true than Taoism is. I hope you all understand that. Science is a model. It's a way of trying to understand something that really is beyond words. Reality just is what it is, and it's beyond human mental comprehension. You'll never understand it. Life is just too immense. Life predates thought. So thought, which is contained within life, will never be able to capture or understand life. But life can be lived. Life can be experienced in its wholeness, in its fullness. And someone who's living from that state constantly is someone that we call enlightened. This is someone who experiences the fullness of life and is actually at one with life. Their body and their mind has been harmonized with what the Taoists would call the way, the Tao. This is in opposition to what most of us experience as what's called the ego, which is a false sense of self, a false sense of separation. What's good for me is not good for you. What's good for you is not good for me. What's good for the whole doesn't really matter because I need to get mine. That's a very sort of gross description of how egoic thought works. It can be much more subtle than that. And it can be very, very insidious as well. So the ego tends to tell us that it's our friend, but it really isn't. One spiritual teacher described it as having a friend who keeps robbing you over and over again, and then you just keep letting them back in your house. They always take something every time they leave, and then you say, "Oh, friend, welcome back, come on in." So if we really pay attention to the egoic structure and the thoughts that result from egoic thought, we really find that it doesn't deliver on its promises. It's not actually our friend, but that's how it keeps presenting itself to us. I'm going to keep you safe. I'm going to make sure you get yours, because if I don't, no one will. But these thoughts actually aren't true. Let's release. We'll go ahead and come all the way back onto our back. We call this the rebound, and it's just an opportunity to relax on your back and feel, to open up to the present moment just as it is. And if possible, you want to do that before you counter-stretch so that you really can get the full impact of those last two postures on your body. Some of the sensations may be what we would call unpleasant, but one quality of the enlightened or awakened state is one of being able to set thoughts aside or question thoughts. So if we really look at the idea of pain, the idea of pleasure, if we actually look at the sensations, we find that they really aren't different, and one actually contains the other inside of it. So unless you've looked very closely at pain, you would never know that pleasure is actually contained within pain. If you just label it and then try and push it away, that's a very unexamined, un-yogic way of dealing with something like pain. Yoga is really the study of the self. So we're studying this body, these thoughts, these emotions, these feelings, all of them ever in flux. And we just begin to watch them. We begin to observe them. And when we do, we begin to see patterns. Some patterns are very skillful and helpful. Others, not so much. Let's bring our legs in, give them a nice squeeze. Shake it off freely, moving back and forth or side to side. This is the time to really address that discomfort. We're not going to keep it forever. But we want to notice it first. We want to have an opportunity to explore it before we push it out of our experience. Then with hands under hips, extend your legs toward the ceiling, lift your head and neck, look at the toes. Exhale, gradually lower the legs. Hover for a moment, head and neck still lifted, and then pop the legs up. Let's come all the way up to seated. All right, from there, let's move into a tabletop position. So hands under shoulders and knees under hips. Turn either to the left or to the right 90 degrees, so facing the side of your mat. 90 degrees, side of the mat, turn. Then take your right leg and kick the right leg out to the right as far as you can. Keep it straight, put it on the ground. Take the left knee to the left as far as you can go. Feel free to pad that left knee if it needs it. So you're taking the legs away from one another. One of them is straight and one of them is bent. Bring the hips as close to the ground as you can. You can stay on your hands or come down to your forearms or even lay on a bolster if you prefer. I call this one the half splits. It's not a yin pose that my teacher uses very much, but I use it a lot because I find it very effectively targets the adductor muscle group. So what do we want to feel in this posture? You'd like to feel a stretch in the inside of the right thigh, okay? You might feel in the inside of your left thigh, which is fine, no problem. In fact, you could say that's good if we can get both thighs. When you have the legs straight like this, you tend to stretch the long adductors like gracilis and magnus and longus. When your knee is bent, like the left leg, you tend to get the shorter adductors like pectineus and brevis. There are five muscles in this group. There were four in the last group that we were stretching. So how do I know I'm stretching my adductors? I can feel it. The pose is right if I feel the stretch in the adductors. And again, I feel relatively safe. That's a very, again, can be a tricky subject. Am I safe or not? But at least if we feel that we're safe, we're a little bit closer than if, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if this is good for me. Okay, so again, if there's any question, please let me know. In all these shapes, you have options. With your right leg, you could have the toes pointed forward, up, or away from you. Your foot could be flexed or pointed. The left leg, the foot could also be flexed or pointed. And the heel could be behind the knee, or it could be pulled in closer to your buttocks. The hips could be over the knee and ankle on the same plane as the knee and the ankle, or the hips could be pushed back closer to that left heel, closer to the ground. The torso can move off to the left side or to the right side a little bit or even a lot. All of these things will likely affect the stretch that you feel in the inside of your right thigh, perhaps to a great degree. Right, very dramatic change, or it might be very subtle. Feel free to experiment with any of those positions for your body to find the one that gives you the best and safest stretch for the inside of the right thigh. If you can release tension from other parts of your body simultaneously, great. Go for it. To many respects, that's the name of the game here. That's what we're trying to do. So let's return to the examination of what the benefits of what we're doing here are from different perspectives. I think different perspectives are great. And I love things like this practice that we're doing today that can be seen as beneficial on many different, from many different points of view. So we don't have to believe in Taoism to benefit from this practice. We don't have to believe in yoga or spirit to benefit from this practice. We can have a completely Western, atheistic, non-spiritual point of view, come to this class, and still get plenty of benefit. Okay? So on a very basic level, one thing that tends to happen to us as we age is we lose flexibility in our lower part of our body, our hips, our spine, the pelvis, the sacrum. We lose flexibility in these areas as we age. If some of you have some young children at home, then you ask them to do some of these poses. They can go like into full splits. Some children can. They probably have a lot more flexibility. You may even remember being a child and being able to do things that now you can no longer do with your body. So some of this may be because just as we age, the connective tissue and the muscles surrounding the hips and the legs, in our culture anyway, tend to get shorter, more tense, more tight. We lose mobility. So someone who's very advanced in years, they often shuffle. They don't walk, they don't stride, they shuffle along. All right, let's switch sides. They don't shuffle because they're weak, although they might be weak as well. But they shuffle because they simply cannot stride anymore. Is everyone all right? Anyone need a hand with this one? All right. So unless you're looking forward to your shuffling days, and I don't think most people are, then we have to take up a practice on a regular basis that will create mobility in the hips and the legs. Now, for my money, nothing is better than yin yoga. I teach flow. It's very valuable. But for me, yin yoga does a much better job at inducing and keeping the mobility of the hips, the legs, and lower spine. And it addresses not just the musculature, but the joints. And so some people who are very flexible, whatever, they might have a lot of flexibility in their muscles, but then their joints can begin to become a problem as well. And joint pain is very often what takes someone like a professional athlete out of their profession. It's not that they're weak. Again, a pitcher in his 40s is not so weak that he can't go on. It's probably his elbow and his shoulder are in such great pain that he doesn't want to continue doing that anymore. Maybe his doctor even says, if you keep doing this, you're not going to be able to use your shoulder anymore in later life, so you should stop now. You've done enough damage. That may not be the best example, I don't know, but anyway, you get the point. The other thing that tends to happen to us as we age is we lose strength in the upper body. So lower body, we lose mobility. Upper body, we lose strength. And so if you understand this, you want to take up practices that strengthen the muscles in your arms, your chest, your back, your core, the obliques. Basically everything from the hips up, you want to focus on strengthening these areas in the torso and the arms. So a well-designed vinyasa practice can do this for us, where we're doing vinyasas to create dynamic strength, and you might do something like arm balances to create static strength in the muscles. Each creates or addresses a different type of muscle tissue. So that's one view of what we're doing with this practice from a Western perspective that makes it very beneficial. And again, it's beneficial if we do it on a regular basis. My teacher Paul likes to say that it's not the heroic one class endeavor to try and break through some kind of resistance that really gives yoga its power. What gives yoga its power is a regular, consistent, persistent practice. And I have to agree with him 100%. Someone who comes to yoga once a month or once a year and expects a miracle, I'm sorry. That's not really the way this practice works. You might get it, but odds are that you won't. Someone who shows up regularly, every day, or a few times a week can expect much better results. I like to think of yoga as just daily maintenance. You wouldn't dream of going a day without brushing your teeth, without sleep, without eating. And yet many of us go many days without a sufficient amount of movement and stress for our body to generate health in that body. And this is unfortunately where we are in human development. We're learning this the hard way, that we have to move our bodies in order to maintain them in a healthy way. The good news is that goes a very long way toward keeping you healthy. If you choose certain practices to do and you do them regularly, you may be able to avoid a lot of medical bills in the future, a lot of problems. And this is because this practice is affecting you on a genetic level. It's affecting the way your genes express themselves. It's affecting the way your cells interact with one another. It might not seem like that. You might just think, oh, I'm just stretching. But this is what's happening. Again, this is the Western perspective. When we exercise, when we work out, when we stretch, we are affecting how our very genes will express themselves. This is known as epigenetics. All right, let's go ahead and let's take a child pose. So if you grew up when I did, you probably remember the Human Genome Project and all the to-do around genes, Time Magazine, and all these different popular science were coming out with articles about the miracles of genes and how we're going to be able to predict this and cure that and do all this different stuff. And here we are 20, 30 years later, and not a lot of that stuff has happened. That's because our exploration of the Human Genome Project revealed that genes are not so much a cast of the die as they are a rough blueprint that your body then decides to work with. And it can choose to express certain genes or repress certain genes. And what we're learning now with the study of epigenetics is that the body very much interacts with our environment and our emotional and mental state. So if you think you can go around as a big stress ball all day long and avoid activating that cancer, latent cancer gene that you might have, that you might have inherited, this is fantasy. You might eat all the right foods and do all the right things, and yet you're walking around with your mind in a tight knot. This will affect your body. All right, from there, let's go ahead and inhale to tabletop. And in tabletop, we'll do what's called bear pose. So moving the spine forward and back, side to side, twisting to the left, twisting to the right. Just move freely. Give your spine a stretch. Stretch the muscles in your torso. Okay, let's go ahead and tuck the toes. We'll lift the hips up and back as we come into the down dog. And just pedal your feet back and forth a few times. Give your legs a stretch. All right, let's bring our right knee toward our right wrist, right foot to the left side of the mat, hips down and back. Relax the torso forward and down. This is called the sleeping swan. So bring the right foot to the left side of the mat. Right foot to the left side of the mat. Yep. Pull it over to the left side. Doesn't have to go all the way, but part of the way. You want to feel this, the outside of your right hip or buttocks, okay? You also want to be sure that your right knee and ankle are safe, that you are not questioning whether this is okay for your knee. So go ahead and pull your foot back toward your hip more. And then roll your left hip closer to the ground. Pull your right knee to the right. Do you feel the stretch in the outside of your hip? Yeah, okay, good. All right, so let's take a look at this posture. We're creating an external rotation in the right femur bone, and that's gonna stretch both the rotators and the glutes in the outside of the right hip. You could have your knee pointing straight ahead, or you can bring the knee out to the right, your right knee to the right. That's called abduction. Some people get a better stretch when they abduct their knee. How will you know if that's you? By trying it. There's really no other way. In yoga, we must verify everything for ourselves, ultimately. Teachers are guides. They can help us. They've maybe seen things that we haven't yet seen or experienced things that we haven't yet experienced. But in the end, we have to experience it for ourselves. We have to verify it for ourselves. Buddha expressed this. Buddha was a consummate yogi. He was an excellent student. He worked with many masters, and he learned everything that they had to teach him. And he went from master to master, and he would perfect every technique that they had and learn everything that they had to teach and see everything that they wanted him to see. And then he realized, you know, this still isn't what I'm looking for. It's sort of like that old U2 song, right? Still haven't found what I'm looking for. That's what happened to him. He'd work with a master and be like, nope, this isn't it. This isn't what I'm looking for. And eventually he found the middle way, which is sometimes the word, what they call Buddhism, the middle way. He had lived as a prince before, so very luxurious life, lots of hedonism, excess, just pleasures. And then he became a sadhu, a wandering hermit who lived in the woods and practiced yoga and starved his body. And then he discovered that neither of these ways were the answer. And so he didn't go back to the palace and live in luxury, but he also didn't starve his body and mutilate his body anymore. He was kind to his body. Some other things you can try here are letting your hips rock over to the left or to the right sides. Again, you might find that that changes what you feel. And what we want to feel, again, is a stretch in the right hip while being relatively comfortable, as free of pain as we can manage. You can also change the position of the torso. This is an often overlooked element, but we actually did that last week. Right? We twisted to the right when doing this posture. And for some, that creates a very intense stretch into the right hip. I've seen students twist to the left as well. So you're welcome to try that. And you can also move your torso in what's called a lateral direction. So you just move your forearms over to the left or to the right, and you might find that that changes what you feel as well. Again, you are the judge. You are the final judge of the success or failure of your posture. If you feel it in the outside of the right hip, then we are having some influence on the muscle group we call the gluteals. And that's what we're targeting in this particular posture today. So my classes will always be very clear what we are trying to target, where we're trying to feel each pose. All right, let's come back through a downward facing dog. Okay, left knee toward left wrist. Okay, hips down and back. Again, I can't emphasize it enough. Please speak up if you're having a hard time. I sometimes have students come to me after class when I'm no longer able to help them because class is done. And they say, oh yeah, you know that sleeping swan pose? That really hurt. Like, well, I can't do much about it now. That is the right approach in a flow class. In a flow class, I don't have time to work with you. It would break the flow, the rhythm of the class. So I get it. That's probably where students get that idea. They think, oh, I'll just wait till after class. That way I won't bother him. But in yin-style practice, I much prefer you go ahead and bother me, let me know. If we have time, we'll see if we can get to the bottom of your issue, figure out what's going on. Because at least in today's class, we have 5 minutes per posture. We've got plenty of time. So don't be afraid to let me know if you need a hand. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's part of the area. It's painful.
Yeah.
Like a sharp pain. Try moving your knee more this way.
This way?
No, like your knee this way. But keep your foot going that way. So knee this way, foot that way.
Like this?
Is it any better?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So from a Western perspective, trying to induce mobility into the hips and the legs, stressing these tissues, very good for us. It's not the only thing we need to do to be healthy, but it's one thing that we can do to try and counteract what we call the natural aging process and to help keep us moving for the rest of our lives. This is something I think most of us want. We just may not realize that there are things that we can do that help that happen. And there are things that we can do that actually cause us to, in essence, age faster, to lose our ability to move much more quickly than we need to. On an epigenetic level, stressing the tissues of our body, moving our body in ways that we normally don't do, again, creates health actually on a cellular level. It affects the way our genes express themselves. And it will be interesting if in the future we can have more studies done on yoga practices and different types of yoga practices and contrast this with groups that aren't practicing yoga and see, can we actually see the evidence in real time of how stressing and working the different tissues of the body affects the way the genes actually express themselves. Then from an Eastern perspective, we're trying to induce an openness in energetic pathways in the body called meridians in Taoism and called nadis in yoga. The yogic idea of healing is on one level very, very simple. It's not super complex. The Western system is very complex. There's not one general idea of health, right? In the West, you ask a doctor, how do I become healthy? He might say, well, go eat the right foods and do the right exercises and see your doctor and take these pills and blah, 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 all these different things. In the East, we can say, how do I become healthy? And they say, make sure that chi and prana can flow freely in your body and that it's balanced, full stop. Now, how do you do that? You might have to do certain exercises, eat certain foods, stop thinking in certain ways, right? Maybe a lot of the same stuff that the Western doctor would say. But the East has a unifying vision, subtle energy, life force energy. If that can flow, then a lot of your problems are going to disappear. If it can't, it doesn't matter how many pills you take. It doesn't matter how many surgeries you get. You're always going to have a problem. Because in the East, energy is more fundamental than physical matter, what we see as physical matter. So energy is going to affect matter. And if you don't believe this, what's the difference between a corpse and a living human being? Do we consider a corpse a person? No. What's missing? Energy. Energy is missing from that body, so that body is now dead. Put it in the ground. It's not important anymore. What's important has left the body. So even in a Western, a very Western mind, we still can agree with this concept. What's primary is energy. It's energy that sustains and forms the physical body, not the other way around. And that's why in yoga, there's so much talk about prana, energy. All right, let's go ahead and take down dog. So while today's class isn't designed to work specific meridians or energetic pathways, it nonetheless affects the meridians of the lower body, what we call the yin meridians in Chinese medicine. So again, the practice, whether we talk about it or not, whether we discuss it or not, affects us on many different levels. All right, let's go ahead and come to kneeling. And we'll take our left leg out in front of us, like so. Okay, now there are several positions for the right leg that I want to discuss. One is your toes can be back behind the heel, like so. The foot is pointed. You could also have the foot flex out to the side, toes now pointing out at this angle. Okay? The right knee could be pointing straight out from the hip, but it can also be abducted out to the side. Okay? Two things that are important, always. One is I feel a stretch at the front of my thigh. Okay? Two, my knee and my ankle feel safe. All right? Now, for some people, it's a dicey proposition getting both of those in this posture. So again, if you need a hand, you need to let me know, okay? Knee and ankle are safe, and I stretch the front of the thigh. Now, for most people sitting upright like this, you're not going to feel a stretch in your thigh. So you begin to lower back. Begin to lower back to your hands, forearms, back onto a bolster, crown of your head, or all the way back on your back. Is it okay if your right knee comes up off the ground? Yes. Is it okay if your right hip comes up off the ground? Yes. Okay. Now what happens if you go all the way back and you still don't feel it? That happens to a lot of people. The first thing you do is you bend your right knee and you place your foot on the ground. Okay, your knee's pointing up. That's because both legs are connected by a thick layer of fascia. So what I do to one leg affects what I feel in the other leg. The second thing you try is, if you're still not feeling it, dropping that knee out to the left side. And then finally, you can hug the leg in if necessary. But all we're looking for is a stretch, again. If we misunderstand what's going on here, we think that we want to do the advanced variation of a pose because we all want to be advanced, right? We want to be good at yoga. But that's, again, a misunderstanding of what's happening here. The advanced variation is for the person who has an excess of mobility in her body for whatever reason. She needs to go further to get the same stretch that someone else does sitting upright. So again, in my classes, please don't think that you're trying to get somewhere else. You aren't. You're trying to get right where you are. You take yourself to the stretch, and then that's where your body is going to benefit. It's called your edge, and it's a very commonly used word in yoga. Find your edge. Go to that place where you're beginning to feel something happen in the target area, but you are not hurting or injuring yourself. And again, that can be a tricky proposition. So if you find it challenging to do that in certain postures, you're not alone. It happens to a lot of people. Sometimes we make mistakes, right? We're human. Sometimes we think we're okay, and then later on we might find that, maybe I overdid it a little bit. Maybe I overcooked it in that posture a little. That's okay. Usually those injuries, or if you can even call them injuries, it might not be even an injury. It's just a sort of irritation. Very often they just pass without problem. Sometimes a sensation like that is actually the feeling of healing beginning to happen in an area that's, again, already damaged. Maybe I've had a hip problem for many years, and then I begin to do yin yoga. And after the yin class, my hip feels a little funky, right? It feels a little funky. Something's been stirred up there, and I'm feeling it. But then, after a day or two of rest, I find, you know what? My hip feels a whole lot better than it did before the class. I can actually move more. So, again, we don't need to be alarmist about anything we're feeling in our body. We just need to pay attention. The thing that I would be concerned with would be something like this. You go to class and you feel a pain afterwards. Then the next time you do the same thing, you feel the same pain, except maybe even a little worse. And then over time, instead of it slowly maybe getting better or dissipating or going away completely or even staying the same, you actually feel it getting worse and worse and worse over time. That's when you really want to sit up and pay attention. A lot of injuries in yoga are what are called repetitive stress injuries. It's not something you do in one class. Maybe in one class you finally break the camel's back and you realize that you've been overdoing it for a while. But that only happens because you've been repeatedly overstressing a certain part of your body. Usually with those things, there is a warning. You will get some kind of like a warning, and usually a big one, like a long time. Oh, that kind of hurts. Oh, that still hurts. Oh, it's still hurting. It's hurting even more. And then one day, maybe, bam, something happens, and you realize that you've really damaged that part of your body. So just pay attention is all. Hopefully none of you will ever have to deal with any of that stuff, but part of the way we avoid dealing with it is knowing about it, knowing it's out there and knowing what to look for. Okay, let's go ahead and switch sides. Take your time. Your way over to the other side. It's usually easier to sit up first, so you might want to go ahead and sit all the way up and then make your way over. Okay. Again, let me know if there's trouble with this for whatever reason. Be nice to your knee and your ankle. Let's see if you can stretch the front of the left thigh, the quadricep muscle group. Quads and hip flexors. Depends on how tight you are, whether your hip flexors are getting a good stretch or not. The more tension I have in these two muscle groups, the easier it is for me to stretch both. If I don't have much tension in the hip flexors, then I just might not feel much of anything in that area. It may be all in the quadricep, which is fine. Today we're treating them as one group. Other times we separate them and target them individually. So if you're wondering what the whole chi and prana thing has to do with spirituality, while it's true that if our chi and prana can flow freely, our bodies and our minds and our health will generally be better, health doesn't necessarily have anything to do with spirituality. One could wake up and be very unhealthy. In fact, one common way for people to wake up is on their deathbed. When all hope is lost and the ego can no longer create a hopeful story, there comes an opening in that because we aren't so excited about creating this story anymore, right? The story of Doug. As long as the story of Doug looks like an interesting story, a fun story, then I might be into it. Ah, Doug's a yoga teacher, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. Yeah, cool. I build that up more and more and more. Let me see what I can get Doug to do. But when it's Doug's got terminal cancer, Doug's on his final days, Doug's in a lot of pain, then I might be happy to let that story go. And in that willingness, truth can come in. The truth is that there really isn't a Doug. That the ego, the identity that we've been thinking is so real. And yes, it does seem like there's a Doug, but when we go looking for him, we find he's not there. There's a great Zen story of one of Bodhidharma's first students coming to him. Bodhidharma was he came from India into China. He brought Buddhism into China. And he would meditate in a cave, and he's sitting in his cave, and he was alone. He didn't have anything, anybody, but people talk, and they said, oh, there's a sage that lives up in that cave, you know. So someone came to him, and he said, you know, teach me. And Bodhidharma said, go away, go away. No. And so what this guy did is he chopped off his arm to show Bodhidharma how serious he was. And he came back with his arm, and he said, this is how serious I am. Teach me. So Bodhidharma said, okay, fine, I'll teach you. And he said, what is it that you'd like to know? And he said, well, I can't quiet my mind. My mind is driving me crazy. And Bodhidharma said, or he said, I think exact words, I can't pacify my mind. So Bodhidharma said, okay, bring me your mind and I'll pacify it for you. So the guy goes inside and he's like, he says, when I look for my mind, I can't find it. He says, there, it's pacified. So this is a little bit what I was alluding to earlier. If we really look at pain, if we really look at sadness, if we really look at the things that we've been avoiding, we can find surprising things if we're willing to look. We really, as yogis, do not want to hide anything from ourselves. We want to bring the light of awareness to all the dark spaces within us, within our psyche and consciousness. We want to do this without judging ourselves. All right, let's go ahead and release. So let's rebound. Okay, so we'll come onto our back, relax, close the eyes. Again, feel the body. Judgments may arise, thoughts may arise, descriptions may arise. That's natural for a human. You don't have to try and push them away, but you also do not have to believe them. And I'll invite you to notice that the thought you're having about what you're experiencing right now, about what I'm saying, about what you're feeling in your body, actually have nothing to do with the experience. The experience can be said to have a reality that is independent of what you think about it. And this is where most of humanity is stuck. They're more interested in what they think about reality than reality itself. Truth is staring you right in the face always. And it's up to you to want to face it. As long as we prefer our story, then eventually that story will lead to suffering. If we're willing to face reality just as it is, even if we're on our deathbed, we can find freedom. We can find truth. All right, let's bring the legs in. We'll give them a squeeze. And then hands under hips, extend the legs up, lift your head and neck, look at the toes, exhale slowly, lower the legs. Hover for a moment, keep your head and neck lifted, inhale, legs up, and let's come all the way up seated. All right, so set up for Yoga Nidra. I'll have you turn around so your feet face that direction. Take a bolster under your knees, laying back flat on your back. If you would like some support for your head, what I recommend is placing a rolled blanket under your neck. But I would like you to try and have your head and your heart on the same plane. Okay, it's a very important little detail.